Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this show should really be helpful to understand our minds better and how our minds have gotten to where they've gotten as human beings and possibly even where they're going. We can't really understand the future until we understand the past and how we got here. So then we know more about what tools we have to use to move forward. And to be able to do that is an incredible book. I've really been absorbed in this book for a while now because it's so rich in information. It's called The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization. That's a big story right there. And it's written by our guest, Carl Johan Kalaman. Carl, welcome to the show. Hello.
It's an honor.
Yeah, hi, Carl. Great. I'm glad you're here so we can talk about this global mind. And you've really been dedicated to this project for a very long time. And this is only one of many books. And yet it feels like it's the whole job in one book.
I would say so too. I think it's really meant to summarize and all the insights that I've had also in the past. But I think it takes it to, you know, my previous work with the Mayan calendar. The new book takes this to a new level where it really goes into what the mind is, and I'm happy about that. It's a new opening for myself, and I hope for others as well.
Well, what I like about it is that you've actually used your research in history to understand how the mind has functioned from the early, very early days of the mind discovering itself and discovering reality in ways that it hadn't before and continues to. And so you can map that. And you've used the Mayan calendar to map it through different epochs of history that make sense in ways that are so fascinating and enlightening that we can really understand our progress and what everything means, where we're at now and why we're there. And, you know, it's deep depth. Well, it's deep depth of, you know, of wisdom about how our minds work based on the story of civilization. And so you go back to a pre-dawn, which is about 10,000 years ago, and you talk about what people were capable of in those days. And then you talk about a very special time, 5,135 years ago, when a miraculous event happened. And by saying miraculous is that nobody can explain why it happened, and it was a worldwide event that shifted the minds of humans. So can you talk about that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's I think the whole idea that the mind is something that evolves is, you know, it may not have been charted out as in as much detail as it does before. And I think to begin with, that idea is up against the predominant view in modern society, at least held by official science, official medicine, etc., is that the mind is something that is created by the brain. And that, I think, is completely false. It's a very misleading concept. It's a concept that also has negative consequences for how medicine is practiced. But also the whole idea that, you know, if each one of us was creating our own mind, or if each one of us had a brain that created our own mind, I doubt that any of us would understand anything about about anybody else. And so this idea that we are part of a global mind, I think, makes so much more sense, because it does explain why we understand each other. I mean, not perfectly, of course, but we understand where other people are coming from, even if they're from different cultures.
But we can understand concepts better from each other, and that's really what started 5,100 years ago, is that the mind became more linear in its understanding of reality, and therefore it could start to build society and engineering and math and language, written language. So many different things happened once the mind developed boundaries and partitions and linearity.
Yeah, exactly. Linearity is what caused it. And from that perspective, we should not be so surprised, I think, that the Egyptians made this huge, astoundingly precise pyramid constructions and so forth, because that is sort of a way of honoring exactly this new linear mind that created not only their civilization, but also our own civilization that has developed from what initially was happened 5,130 years ago. And the surprising thing maybe is that the Maya then actually have left behind an inscription in the beautiful site of Palenque, where they actually describe that this was sort of the earth grid was downloaded at this particular time. And the earth grid is a perpendicular line, like you might liken them to longitudes and latitudes, even though they don't follow our modern system. But then when the Earth changed in that way, all humans who are in resonance with the Earth, this is, after all, our home. And so our resonance with the Earth then created a mind in each one of us. But that mind was the same mind. And so we should not also then be surprised that at the same time, as the Egyptians started to build their pyramids, you find peoples in other parts of the world, like in Mongolia or in Peru, vastly long distances away from Egypt. They started to build pyramids at the same time. And before that, we have really no pyramids built on this planet. So it seems they were all connected to this global mind, the activation of this global mind, which is a little bit of a mystery, of course, because it is a metaphysical, spiritual event that the Maya attribute to what they call the First Father, what we probably just would call God today. And but nonetheless, we can see the effects of this event very, very clearly, and we see it in many different parts of the world starting at the same time, and the whole concept of linearity, perpendicularity, if there is such a word, and also you might say the new function of the mind to be discerning, to be able to separate different aspects of reality and act upon this. That's really, I say, the key aspect, a form concept that were useful in transforming reality.
And you see that according to the Mayan calendar, and that's what's so beautiful in your book. This book is so elucidated with charts and the way that the calendar, it's called the long count, right? It's called the long count. And it's broken up into different epochs. And there are actually epochs of day followed by day and night and day and night and day and night through history of approximately 360 years each, right?
Yeah.
And what's fascinating is for you to demonstrate through history. You're using the results of history to show what happens during those epochs of day versus what happens during those epochs of night.
Yeah.
And it's so helpful for us now to know that we have just finished an epoch of day.
Yes.
And now we don't know what we're in, but it's some sort of night. And yet, let's not be frightened by night, because night has its other potentialities, because in the daytimes of these epochs, the linearity was more powerful in the Western way, in the Western mind. And it built civilization societies based on Western thought, which is much more hierarchical, structured, much more aggressive, perhaps. Maybe not more aggressive, but more aggressive in its use of linear tools. And so our society, like, for instance, it's the daytime that we've just been through, 360 years, has been all this industrial revolution, so much structure, building of massive cities with skyscrapers, all kinds of opportunities to use our Western brains versus Eastern brains.
Yeah.
You know, the East is only, now the East is reflecting the West only because the West has dominated the world for the last 360 years.
Yeah. And you might say, you know, that a night is a little bit, it really corresponds a little bit, these days and nights, the longer eras of time, that really correspond a little bit between our own daily rhythm of going into sleep and going up in the morning. Because in the sleep we dream, and we don't have like the sharp connections, the rational mind is not there to say this is this, or to separate and compartmentalized. Anything might happen in our dreams. The connections are open in a certain sense. And that's somewhat what we must expect from this time ahead. That is more connections are possible, whereas in a day's time, when we think we think rationally, we sharply, we divide, you might say, and so forth. And that's the same in the longer eras that are days. That's the eras of you might say, sharp, separating thinking, technologically invasive modes of thinking. So the days and nights, they both have their places, and they're both there for a reason. And I also like to add here that this whole view of the history of civilization as being based on a wave movement is something that really also explains some enigmas of history, because there's always these kind of discussions about why did the Roman Empire come to an end, why did the Maya so-called disappear, which they didn't, but that's at least their high civilization, you might say, went down, as did the Roman and a number of other civilizations in the history of mankind. And in this perspective, it's simply just part of this wave movement of activation and deactivation of a global mind. And this has consequences all over the planet, and that's why, you know, we're still not in the Roman Empire, because a night started in 434 AD, and that night brought it down, and the whole Roman structure organized in Europe and the Middle East broke down, and people started to migrate in all kinds of directions and so forth. It's sort of just this is just the wave movement of history, and it's there. We have to recognize these time periods, that the nights are there to to create new sort of a new openings, new contacts, new connections, and so forth. Whereas sometimes when a day starts, it usually means the activation of a new civilization. And but then again, you know, at some point you also will have to contemplate a little bit of this civilization, and that's what happens in the nights.
Okay. Now the thing is that these nights aren't lasting 10 years or 20 years. These nights last hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And so we've entered into a night that could go a few hundred years.
Yeah, it should go to 2400.
Right.
That's right.
So we're in a long period now of not compartmentalizing the way we have.
Right.
And so the structures that we've created become very vulnerable now because they will self-destruct.
Yeah, that's very well said. I would say that is what's happening.
And then the fear is, okay, we're into destruction of society as we know it. What's next? And all we can think of is potential chaos. And that's, I don't know if we should be thinking that way, because the night doesn't mean total destruction of everything we know. It just means that we don't hold sacred the compartmentalization anymore.
Yeah, that's very well put. What I do want to add to this, though, is that my book does not talk very much about the higher waves, the seventh and the eighth and the ninth wave that have been activated and that were fully activated at the shift in October of 2011. So there are waves that in the recent 300 years have been activated on top of this sort of large-scale civilizational wave movement. And those waves, those higher waves, were not active at the time of the Maya or the time of the Romans and so forth. But they are active and in principle available now. And that changes the whole perspective. And even though, yes, as you're saying, we're entering a night in the long count, and that has exactly the kind of consequences that you're saying in a very good way. But then these other waves have been activated, and they will give us other kinds of possibilities of that will add completely to the picture.
What do you think about that?
What
do you think about these waves? What kind of credit do you give them?
I get what you mean. How much I trust their ability to change us?
And in what possible ways?
Oh, well, it has become very complex after the shift. That is the true meaning of the shift. Because now there are nine waves running in parallel and accessible, and they have somewhat different consequences, and meaning that any kind of predictions will be very difficult if you want to go into detailed, concrete predictions. But I do believe that first of all, it is shifting over to the east, what is more important is that the ninth wave, the top wave of the pyramid, which is truly a wave without filters, a wave without duality, a wave that brings no perception of duality to humanity, and that is really the hope of the future. But it's only been active for some 3 years, and we sense it. That's one part of the change that we sense. We sense there is some kind of a spiritual awakening going on, and But, you know, in terms of people that have been fully born into this particular wave, the ninth wave, they are 3 years of age now. And so they're not making headlines. We don't know really what kind of a world they are about to create. But,
right. And,
you know,
and one way two ways I want to look at this. One is the way that you talk about in the book of Revelation and how through history we've seen many new concepts that have come into reality that we couldn't imagine that those people didn't understand that before then. For instance, adding perspective to art. We can't imagine that the previous artists didn't know how to put perspective into art.
Right.
And yet all of a sudden consciousness was able to hold that. And
yes.
So what you demonstrated, and that goes on through many aspects of our history, is that we all of a sudden realize things we never realized before, and we don't understand how we missed it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so so that portends for the future that we're going to have realizations coming to us that will be remarkable for our future that we've never thought of before.
Right.
And that's why we have to trust the future, because we can't trust it from our present global mind.
That's good. That's good put.
Right. So the idea then is that we are moving into an unknown future that we and the children are being born into it now, who will be able to hold these higher frequencies. The other aspect I just wanted, you know, I always like to fine-tune this idea of non-duality, because everybody wants non-duality. But non-duality means one, and one means not two, and that means you can't even have a thought, because as soon as you have a thought, you have two. Because you have the thought and the not thought. So to me, I always think of non-duality as a much shorter distance from the center of yin and yang, rather than the huge distance of polarities we live in today that have such drama of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we will still have duality, but it will, the yin and the yang versions of it won't be as extreme. And that might not be so good in a way that there can't be as much growth from that. But maybe that's the idea, is that we've done a lot of growth. Now let's have a time where we just take advantage of it.
And, I think that's what's meant to happen, yes.
Good.
You know,
And we'll still grow, but in ways that aren't as aggressive, perhaps, or you know, as compartmentalized, meaning perhaps as competitive, and as based so much on good and bad, and right and wrong, and we'll be able to include all of those better. We'll see them as all in a more positive way.
That's good. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at some point, I guess we will have to, you know, it's almost in today's world that people have it as an inherent part that, you know, we have to grow, we have to change, we have to change, you know, whatever way, it just has to be changed. And you know, I think some point in maybe 20 or 30 years, people will say to themselves, I don't need to change, I don't need to grow, I'm here, I'm happy to be here, and then that's all there is to it, so to speak.
Right, simplify and create presence.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what the younger people are here to help us do better. And this whole spirituality movement is really to find that oneness within us and within each other, and expand that and bring everybody together into that greater sense. And yet, this is going to be over 300 years of doing this in the future before something else happens that probably creates a new day.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't, you know, it never comes to a sort of a place of no evolution or something like that. But I have a feeling, though, that much earlier than that, in a generation or so, there will be sort of the unity consciousness will be taking some kind of an overriding place, that the other changes will be take part of, rather than throwing it all over, so to speak. I think we will come to a point where there is no return to a complete duality as people have had mostly for the past 5,000 years. I think that kind of extreme duality will never return.
And one thing you also talk about is our ability to contemplate or to recognize the inner depths of the planet and the different frequencies that take place, like when you get down into a core area that's 600 kilometers in diameter, there's an 81 hertz frequency that creates the strongest consciousness in our minds. And so the planet itself is food for thought.
That's good. The planet is, as you're saying, food for thought, and these connections between the brainwave frequencies and different shells of the interior of the Earth, it really does show very clearly, I think, that our minds are not separately created by our brains, but our minds are something that comes from the Earth. You might say the Earth is some kind of a structuring crystal that that brings the mind to us, what we do is basically we are resonating with the Earth, and we can focus on different parts, different shells in its structure, and depending on what we focus on, we will come to different states of mind, and. You know, what's been known for quite some time is the fact that the Schumann resonance, which is a standing electromagnetic wave on the surface of the Earth, that this has a frequency of about 7.5 hertz.
Right. And down below it's 81 hertz, and that's a big change.
Yeah.
But we only have about a minute left of the show, so...
Okay.
It's only a half hour, unfortunately, because there's so much to talk with you about. I'm so enjoying this conversation, and I would really love for you to come back at some point in the future. I know you have new books you're working on, and you're expanding all of this, so that's so great. The name of the book is The Global Mind and the Rise of Civilization, and your name is Carl. I guess you pronounce it Johann Kalleman, Calleman. Is there a website?
Yeah, there is the Kalleman.com, Kalleman.com. And the book is available there as well as in other normal sources.
Yeah, Carl, thank you so much. It's been so much fun talking with you. Your work is fantastic, and I really appreciate you being a guest on Energy Steam.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Peter, and I really feel you have assimilated it, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you
very much.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.